Hi, my name is Danielle, and you're listening to Crime and Mystery Canada. On this podcast, we discuss subjects that might be creepy to some and sometimes even frightening. Some of our episodes will deal with serious subject matter, while others will be more lighthearted. Please keep in mind that I am not an expert on any of the topics I cover, just an interested party, and as always, listener discretion is advised. Hi, everyone, and welcome back. I'm Danielle.
I'm Paul Emile.
And you're listening to Crime and Mystery Canada. On this week's episode, we're going to be discussing an unsolved train bombing that happened in the 1900s that led to the death of Peter Verjin. You know about it?
I believe so.
Yeah. I read about it months ago. I actually had started writing an outline for this episode, and historically, it's pretty interesting, and we're going to go through the backstory of who Peter was and how he came to Canada. But also that train bombing, I mean, it's still unsolved to this day, but we'll get into more of that. So we're going to start by taking a look at Peter's backstory, which begins in Russia. Peter, who is often referred to as Lordly Verjin, was born in Russia on July 12, 1859. He was born in a Dukober settlement. Now, Dukober is also a word that I listen to pronunciation videos for. I listened to 6 different videos and not one of them pronounced it the same way. So this was the easiest one for me to remember, so I'm sticking with that.
So is that the name of a town?
No, so the Dukobers are a spiritual Russian Christian group. So it's like a religion, a way of living. And according to Wikipedia, they're known for their pacifism. That was a big belief of theirs, not to take up arms for any cause. Peter's father was not an educated man, but he was well off. And at one point, he was elected as the head of the Russian village in which they lived. And according to historical records, he was actually a pretty cruel ruler. They referred to him as a despot, which apparently means that you are cruel and mean and do not rule fairly. Had to look that one up. Peter had 7 brothers, but only 3 of them, Peter included, received an education. And I think, especially back in those times, that wasn't unusual. So your children would be part of your workforce almost. And to give some of them an education, you were taking away from money coming into the house.
Right. And they probably could only afford to educate so many of them. Plus, getting an education back then probably meant leaving home and having to move to another city. So
yeah, in this case, I think they were actually homeschooled, so they were well off. They may have been able to afford tutors or something like that. But 3 of his brothers did receive an education. At a young age, Peter got married, and he was beginning to start his own life. However, according to CanadianMysteries.ca, he'd caught the attention of his cousin's widow. Her name was Lucaria. She was actually the leader of the Dukobers after her husband had passed. So he used to be the leader. Once he died, she took over. And she decided that she'd groom Peter to take her place once she died because they'd never had any children. So she decided that Peter would be the next leader. I don't know how much of a say he had in this decision, but it came at a high price. She had his marriage annulled and essentially moved him into her house. So he worked kind of like her secretary while training to take over.
So was she older than him?
She was in her 40s and he would probably have been, they said he got married when he was young and he was only married about 2 years, so probably about 20, around that. When Lucaria passed, the community of Dukobers was fractured. Part of the community decided to follow Peter, but another group refused to accept him as their leader and instead chose to follow Lucaria's brother. The groups are known as the large group, which is Peter and his followers, and the small group, which is Lucaria's brother Michael and his followers. But the small group actually held most of the power. And the reason for that is that the community elders were part of this group, but also most of the local authorities were. So Peter and several of his followers ended up in exile in northern Russia.
That would have been a very nice place to go to.
No, I think there's a reason you were exiled there. Over the years, Peter was contacting some people that he knew that were in power and pleading for them either to be able to return from exile or to go to another country so that they could live peacefully. Their pacifism was really causing an issue in Russia because there was mandatory military training that needed to take place and they refused to take up arms. So finally, Peter and his followers were allowed to leave Russia and they headed to Canada. In 1902, Peter and about 7,500 other Ducobers headed to Canada and they established themselves in Yorkton, which is now Saskatchewan.
Yeah, there's a lot of Russian settlers there and Ukrainians, because I believe at one time they were looking for farmers and were giving tracts of land to immigrants.
Yeah, and that's what happened to them. They received land from, I don't know if it was called a province back then, but they received land from Yorkton so that they would be able to farm it and build upon it and start their community. But in Saskatchewan, even before Peter arrived, some of the Ducobers were already considered out of control by the authorities. They really hoped that Peter's arrival would calm them down since he was their leader. Some of the Ducobers actually considered Peter to be like a Christ figure, and they followed and respected him, but others were beyond his control. They tried to convince outsiders to shirk their worldly possessions and join them, so they'd be throwing weapons to the ground, burning weapons to show their pacifism, and to show people that they should leave all their worldly possessions behind. What they would often do is strip naked and parade around the community to see, like, say, like, we don't even need the clothing on our back.
I think it's more of a way to start a fight than to stop one.
Well, it was causing problems, and a lot of people weren't comfortable with that. But by most accounts, Peter was very well respected and held in high esteem amongst his people. He quickly fell for a 17-year-old named Anastasia, and they were never officially married because this wasn't really a tradition that they followed, but for all intents and purposes, she was his wife and remained so until his death. Now, keep in mind, Peter would have been about, well, around his mid-40s at this point. But I guess back then it probably was more common to take a 17-year-old wife.
You still see that today with certain religious groups.
Yeah. From 1905 to 1907, there was pushback from the government to get the Ducober land. So they'd been there for a couple years. They'd established communities and villages. But from what I could gather, the government wanted to take back the land they'd given to them because there were more and more people interested in coming and land became an asset. So they were citing basically new rules that were put in place. I didn't follow exactly what they were saying, but I think so. A person had to own the land and they didn't want to put like a person's name on the land. So they just were saying, well, you're not following the rules. So we want the land back.
So it was communal land instead of...
They had a very, like, I think their ideal was to have a communal way of living. So not one person would own it, but it would be everyone's. So around this time, Peter absented himself from the community and he returned to Russia, apparently to discuss whether or not they would be welcomed back. While he was gone, the government seized most of the land they had in Saskatchewan. According to CanadianMysteries.ca, many thought that had he been around, this would not have happened. So Peter wasn't discouraged by any of this. He started looking around for new land to settle and find somewhere so that they could relocate. They chose some land out in British Columbia, and over the next 5 years, most of their community moved to this area. So some stayed on the land that they still had in Saskatchewan, but most of them were now in British Columbia, and they developed some orchards on the land, had a jam making factory, and I think a brick factory. So they really worked with what they had.
Also, the weather in British Columbia would have probably been a lot better for growing fruit and gardening and, or farming.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that attracted him to that area. He saw this community as a potential utopia for his people. He really wanted to have a communal lifestyle, sharing resources, and basically having a moneyless economy. So everyone worked, everyone shared was the ideal. But in British Columbia, problems continued to follow them. Because they still owned land in Saskatchewan, Peter had to travel back and forth. So there were a lot of little villages he had to visit, and it could go like a year before he ended up back at one of those villages. So, because of this, he basically named leaders in each area, and this angered some of the Ducobers. They didn't like that idea. And then the government also wasn't being very welcoming towards them. So, there was some conflict over monetary matters, but there was also the question of the Ducobers not sending their children to school. So it was around this time that schooling became mandatory.
The more things change, the more they are the same, because we could change this religious group to another religious group today, and the governments are still struggling with the same type of problems.
Yeah. They wouldn't send their children to school. They would be fined. Some of them even had jail sentences because of this. So tensions were getting high between the Ducobers and the government, as well as some of the citizens of British Columbia who just did not like them. I think that was probably more of a lack of understanding towards people who are different than you. In 1912, there was a commission from the government of British Columbia that was put together to investigate the Ducobers, and they actually found that the group did a lot to expand the local community. But they also found that people that were not part of that community were pretty much against anything that they were doing. So it was causing a lot of conflict. In 1914, the Ducobers were told by the government that they were required to register births, deaths, marriages, and send their children to school. So, this was not part of their way of life. They didn't really follow those official kind of rules. So, I think it was something that they basically, despite the fact that the government was telling them they had to do it, they were not necessarily following those orders. And in 1914, there was also a war that broke out overseas, and Canada was part of it. The Ducobers were exempt from military service because of their pacifist beliefs, but Peter told the government that the Ducobers that had left their community should not be exempt from military service.
So, is he doing that out of spite?
I don't know. I think in his mind, maybe it meant you weren't a true believer. So if you didn't have those, those fundamental beliefs, you can't reap the benefits of it. It might have been spite as well, but I think that's what they were getting to. In 1916, Peter's home was burned to the ground. I couldn't find any information saying whether or not anyone was injured in the fire, but this wouldn't be the only arson that the Ducobers went through, and sometimes it was unclear whether it was dissidents from their group that were the cause of these events or outsiders that were not comfortable with them that were causing these problems.
Or both.
It could have been both, for sure. So the tension continues to mount between the Ducobers and the government. Some of the Ducobers decide that they're removing their children from school, so apparently they had agreed to send them, but with tensions mounting, they decide to take them out of school. The nude protests start again and the acts of arson continue. On October 28, 1924, Peter, as well as a woman who I've seen referred to as his secretary in some articles, but then in two articles, one of them being on jucober.org, they referred to her as his current favorite. But they boarded a train in Brilliant, British Columbia, and they were heading to Grand Forks. Just after 1 o'clock in the morning, after the train left Fallon, a huge explosion occurs in car 1586 in which Peter was riding. Peter and eight other people are killed in the explosion. Immediately, the speculation behind why that train car had been bombed starts, and to this day, many people believe that that bomb was intended for Peter.
So the train car, was it all people associated to him, or were there other people in the same car?
There were a few people associated to him. There were other politicians in the car as well. The car, I think I read, fit about 70 people, but luckily there was only 21. And it was a really bad explosion. Apparently everyone literally flew out of the car. So out of 21, only 9 people died, which you shouldn't say only 9 people, but 9 people died, which actually could have been a lot worse. Part of the problem following the explosion is it had happened in the Monashee Mountains, and it wasn't an easy spot to get to. There wasn't even any road leading there. So the police and railway officials needed to get there either by train or by handcart. So some of them left by handcart from the closest station and headed towards the train to try and figure out what had happened and help people that had been injured.
So a handcart, one of those pump cars on the railroad?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that would have been a trip in the mountains.
Like seesaw it up and down. Yeah, I can't. I think I would have rather been on the special train heading in and not on the handcart. Couldn't have been warm in October either.
No.
Almost immediately, an inquest is launched because there's several people. Like I said, there were politicians and things like that in that car, so they're trying to figure out what happened. So there's a lot of questions raised from this explosion. Was Peter the intended victim? He'd been on the receiving ends of a lot of threats, arson, he'd been fighting with the government. And if the bomb was intended for him, it almost feels like there's several suspects, like who could have done it? The newspapers quickly begin reporting that the explosion was not the result of a gas tank exploding, but actually of explosives that were not supposed to be in the train. I was a little confused there because I thought trains at that point would have been running on coal, but apparently the gas was kept for other things. Like I think it was for lighting and things like that, so not to make the train run.
Probably lighting and cooking, yeah, and heating the cars.
Right, that makes sense. The police do speculate that it may have been possible that a bomb caused the explosion, but the state of the car was like so destroyed that it was really hard to tell. A lot of the things on the train car had burned. So the investigation continues, and they do conclude that the explosion was caused by a bomb. And their main reason for this is that they found an alarm clock that they believe may have served as a timer for a bombing device. There were also rumors that two suspicious characters were seen on the train platform before they left the Fallon station, shortly before the train exploded. So a few months pass, it's December 1st, they really have no further information. They don't know what to do. No one's claimed responsibility for this explosion. So there's a reward offered. The papers start publishing it. A $2,000 reward for information that would lead to discovering who was responsible for the explosion. The Canadian Pacific Railway is really quick to say that they found that the explosion was through no fault of their own. So they say it's not the gas, it's not mechanical failure, had nothing to do with us. And also you found a clock, clearly it was a bomb, and there was a Ducobar leader on the train, probably that was for him.
Although there was politicians also.
Right, but I suspect that maybe they weren't quite entangled in conflict like Peter was, so I think that's why everyone's really quick to say that this bomb was for Peter. So we're going to talk about a few suspects. One of them is the Soviet government. So to me, this feels a little bit conspiracy theory. The reason for that is, as I mentioned, Peter went back to Russia at one point to see if his community could return to Russia. There was more of an acceptance to different religions at the time, so he believed that their pacifism would have been accepted. And he was actually told, I think it was a czar that's in power there, but he was told that they could return safely, and he promised that no harm would come to them. But he didn't really trust what he was being told, so he decided not to return. And they believe that maybe that the Russians saw this as a snub and decided to seek revenge.
You would think that if they were rid of them, they wouldn't have gone out of their way to bomb them.
All the way to Canada. And this trip happened around 1907, and the explosion happened in 1924. It feels like a bit of a stretch.
Yes.
And I don't usually dive into necessarily different theories and things like that, but I feel like because this happened so long ago, I think it's okay to speculate a little bit about what could have happened.
I think you're right. And also the methods of investigating they had at that time were pretty primitive still. And even communication between provinces, like within Canada itself, was difficult, let alone in another country like Russia.
Right. And not only all that, but the other thing is they could barely make their way out there. So even any equipment they had for investigation, I'm sure it was difficult to trek it out there and to use it. So they may have been pretty limited with that as well. Some people believe that Peter's son was actually responsible for the bomb. He was actually in Russia when it happened, but he may have gotten some people to plant the bomb for him. And he would be taking over for his father once he passed. So there was a lot of suspicion that he may have caused his father's death. But the Dukhobor community didn't believe that a son would kill his father. This just went against everything that they believed in, so they couldn't see it. Peter's son was actually elected their leader. He did take over leadership, but he was not a good leader at all. He was apparently drank a lot and used the communal money for himself. So he took over. He didn't do a great job. And in the 60s, the RCMP actually seemed to have spent quite a bit of time chasing down this lead. But they said that there wasn't enough evidence pointing to the son, so they kind of had to let it go. There's some that believe that the Canadian government was responsible, which again, to me, is a little bit conspiracy theory here. And they say that they're trying to get rid of Peter and the problems that the Dukhobor community was causing. I know they weren't happy and there were conflict, but I'd be very much surprised if the Canadian government planted a bomb that was going to kill Peter as well as other people on a train.
I'm not only surprised to be... quite disappointing to find out that that's what they did. Who knows? But I'd like to think they would have found a way that would have only affected Peter and not some innocent people in the...
But even by getting rid of Peter, the community's not gone. All the people are still there. Like, you're cutting off the head, but someone else is going to step up. So I feel like it's a theory that's put out there, but it's not one that I feel like... I don't feel like it has a lot of weight. And then there's also a theory that it was the Ku Klux Klan. So the reason for this theory is that Peter was really feeling the tension that the government was imposing on them to change their way of life and had actually started again looking for new land. And I feel like this was actually his way, where instead of giving into the conflict, he'd just say like, okay, you're not happy with us here, we're going to go somewhere else. Which, if they did contribute a lot to the community, that was actually kind of like a threat without him being threatening. Do you know what I mean? Like, he was taking away things from them.
Right. We're not wanted here, we'll just leave, but we're bringing our knowledge and our people with us.
And our resources and all of that. So Oregon was a place that he'd been looking for land, and apparently they had a lot of Ku Klux Klan. I don't know much about the history of the Klan, but they didn't want the Dukeobers there, so they would have planted the bomb on the train. Again, seems like a bit of a stretch to me as well. I feel like Peter hadn't bought land, like it wasn't a sure thing, so I feel like it would be a lot of effort to go through for something that might never come to fruition.
I think at that time the Klan was preoccupied with other things than having to come all the way to Canada to plant a bomb to get rid of somebody that may or may not be moving there.
The thing is, though, even though there's a lot of theories as to who could have been involved in this, no one, like I said, no one came forward claiming responsibility. And we don't even know to this day for a fact that it was a bomb that was intended to kill Peter. There were other people there. Maybe it had nothing to do with anyone there. Maybe it was more of a protest against the railway or the CP Rail themselves.
It could have it was it would have been a great way if you wanted to get rid of somebody. People think that Peter is the target, but you don't know who it was. So if somebody that you don't know about, it's a good way to cover it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
The other thing, too, is we also don't really know for a fact that there was actually a bomb on the train. Finding an alarm clock at the scene, I can see, might sound unusual today, but before cell phones, you had to travel with an alarm clock to wake you up if you had anywhere to go while you were traveling. So having an alarm clock in your luggage wouldn't be unusual.
Well, even as in the 70s, they sold little travel alarm clocks that folded like a small case that you could bring with you. So.
I had an alarm clock up to like probably about 8 years ago. I traveled with an alarm clock.
So if the explosion was that bad, it could have been just part of somebody's luggage.
Right. And the other thing is apparently miners would sometimes travel with dynamite as part of their work equipment. Which sounds completely ridiculous, but apparently it was a thing that happened. So it could have been dynamite in a miner's luggage that exploded. And let's keep in mind that CP Rail investigated themselves and said that they had nothing to do with it, which is really not a good way to investigate something.
Well, that was going to be my next comment. At that time, the CP Rail could have had workers that were going to either build a new tunnel or clear, widen out a track, and the workers would have been traveling with what they needed, and it would have been dynamite.
Right. So, and they said that it wasn't a faulty, gas canister or anything like that. But again, when you investigate yourself, there's a lot of bias that you're bringing to the table. And it would probably have been fairly simple to have a cover up of a mistake that was made by them. So I think we really need to take their word with a grain of salt. We do know that there's plenty of suspects and plenty of people that didn't like Peter and his people, but it doesn't mean that there's a causality, like a cause-effect relationship there. It could just have been that someone that had a lot of enemies was on the train and an explosion happened without him being the reason that the explosion happened.
There's another side to that too, is when the railway was built, there were a lot of minorities that were basically used and forced to work.
That's another episode in and of itself.
Right. And they were disposable. So, maybe it was somebody from one of those groups that was getting back at the railway. We'll never know.
I actually did have a quick look, a very quick look, to see if they were still offering reward money for information that would solve the crime. I couldn't find an answer to that question, but the case is still open.
Oh, interesting.
There are still Dukeobers in Canada, and even though we talked about violence that did happen and the arson and things that they did, those were often dissidents of the group. with their own agenda. Most of them were very peaceful people who just wanted to continue to live their way of life without being bothered by the government. So I don't want anyone to feel like we were trying to be dismissive of them. It was just a historical recounting of events that took place and not directed towards that group at all.
Right, and we can say the same thing about any group. Well, we'll talk about Canada because that's where we're at, but in one of the episodes we talked about the problems with the national park, and you know, there was violence there, but the goal was not violence. The goal was to retain their land. So there's always somebody that's going to push the issue a little too far, and you know, you can't point the finger at a specific group of people. Most of them were peace-loving people and just wanted their place to live and prosper.
Right, and they felt that they'd been taken advantage of. And I think probably for the Ducobers, there was a lot of that too, where they felt that they were bringing a lot to the community where they were working, and they kept being told that, well, sure, but you're not following our ways, so we don't want that. We want you to assimilate, right?
Right.
And they'd been kicked out of Russia. They'd been kicked out of Saskatchewan. Like, there was a lot of pain that happened there, I'm sure.
Well, they were basically nomadic because as soon as...
they settled one spot.
Yeah. And, you know, greed. You see somebody coming in with the community way of living and clearing land and building farms. And, you know, it looks like a pretty good piece of land. So... because they were peaceful people, they were easy to bully, I suppose, and convince to move on.
I don't know for sure if a crime happened back in 1924 on that train, but it's certainly a mystery. We still have no answer either way.
It is, and it's an interesting story because even though it's a long time ago, it's part of our history, and you know, I had heard about it before, not in as many details as you talked about in this episode.
We're going to finish up tonight with our moment of kindness. I was reading an article, actually it was a post on Facebook the other day, and I thought I would share it with everyone. There was a woman who was feeding a feral cat colony in her neighborhood. And a few days ago, she went to check on them, and it's kitten season right now, so there's a lot of kittens being born. So she was feeding some cats and kittens and taking care of them as best as she could. And when she got there, there was an open pipe leading into the ground, and it wasn't very big, like the opening was probably a little bit bigger than a mug, essentially. And she saw one of the kittens falling into the pipe. And he was crying inside of there, and one of his siblings wanted to check on him and also fell into the pipe. So she witnessed these two kittens falling in. She called her local cat rescue, which in turn called the police. And the police obviously didn't have the equipment to get the kittens out, so they ended up calling a plumber who stepped up and rescued the two cats out of the pipe, but also plugged the pipe. They sealed it off so this wouldn't happen again. These two kittens are safe and sound. They've been taken in by the rescue and are waiting to be spayed or neutered and will be up for adoption once they're all vetted and old enough. So hopefully, despite having a scary adventure in the beginning of their lives, they get to lead a peaceful life safely after that.
Yeah, and the great thing with that is people getting together to do something that there's nothing in it for them other than the satisfaction of having done it and knowing they helped save those two kittens.
That it was the right thing.
Right. There's no money involved. There's no fame involved. They just went and did it and packed their stuff and left. So it's good that at least they're acknowledged.
For sure. So I think that was it was kind of a selfless act where obviously nobody put their lives in danger, but everyone gave some of their time to save the two kittens that otherwise would have perished because there's no way they could get out of there.
Right.
Thanks to everyone who's been listening. You can join our Crime and Mystery Canada Facebook group. Actually, I wanted to thank you for taking charge of the Facebook group a little bit. I've mentioned several times I'm not the best at social media, so thank you for taking responsibility for that.
I've been having fun with that, and it's been growing a lot, And, you know, if anybody that's listening has anything that they want to discuss or point out to us, that's the place to do it. And I usually respond pretty fast.
Yeah, and we do actually look at the cases you suggest, either through the Facebook group, Instagram, or through the email. And I know I can't get to everything right away, but everything is on an Excel spreadsheet that I've made. So everything is on the list. Anything anyone mentions goes on that list. You can also find us on Instagram at Crime and Mystery Canada, or write us at crimeandmysterycanada@gmail.com. Stay safe out there, everyone, and have a good night.
Good night.